Welcome to Bartender at Large. I'm your host, Eric Castro. And as usual, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in the industry. With me today, bartender and graphic design artist, Amanda Elder.
Hi.
Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, one of the common topics that comes up on the show is about how in today's bartending world, there's so many more opportunities for expression and ways to pursue your career while kind of still staying in the industry. I find it really fascinating what you do. So although you bartend at Donna Cocktail Club still, and
you
balance that with another creative field, and that's your graphic design.
Yeah. I bartended all through college, but my second degree is in graphic design. I always assumed that I would eventually stop
second
bartending.
Degree. What was your first degree?
Art history. Super
okay,
useful.
Cool.
So shockingly, I didn't run with that and have a career right away. So there was a lot more bartending after that. But by the time I moved to New York and finished my degree in graphic design, it was always the intention to sort of phase out of bartending. When I started making cocktails and I realized how sort of creatively enjoyable that type of work was, I sort of stuck with it. And then it was just a matter of trying to figure out how to do both in some capacity. And I think, like, even though my journey has been very personal to me, there are so many people doing the same type of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you end up meeting so many bartenders that are, you know, like, they have some degree in fine arts of some kind, you know, where they're like painting on the side, or they're designers in some way, or, you know, they're, you know, making music, or they're DJing, or I've met people that are studying interior design. Like, I think it's a very common thing that this, like, draw towards cocktails has to do with the sense of creativity and the sense of making. So I'm one of many, I think, that are trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you something, and I'm going to see, I want to get your opinion on this. I try to ask this to bartenders, who are also in other creative fields. And I found, at least from my own experience, for some reason in my mind, I used to think like, oh, if I branch into like other creative fields, I'm like depleting this finite amount of creativity I had. But what I've actually found since is that, like, by being in photography and video and playing around with music, I find that my cocktails have become better.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even when I was in design school, they always suggested that you know, like, you take time away from, you know, sitting at your desk and trying to, like, do these projects that have been assigned. It's super important to go out and just see things and do things that don't necessarily have a direct correlation to what it is that you're working on, because you're subconsciously picking up inspiration from, like, everything that you see. And obviously your work is going to be that much richer if you're not just drawing from the same sort of pools of inspiration every single time. So I think, like, it definitely makes your work better in both cases. Like, your cocktails become better because you're interested in these other things, and whatever the other things are become better because, you know, you're thinking about it in terms of the service industry too. I definitely think that's, like, the good way to go.
Yeah, I found that, like, you know, I'll be working on a project. I'm like, okay, I need to come up with these, like, 10 cocktails for, you know, for this project we're working on. And then I'll find, like, if I ever get writer's block, I'll just, like, grab my camera and just start taking photos around town or whatever. Just go for a walk. And it's like, I find when I get back, I'm just, like, more recharged. It's like you somehow, like, replenish your creative juices.
Yeah. I mean, because when you think about it, cocktails, there's really not so much going on these days that, like, has absolutely never been done before. You know, there are not a lot of, like, a gazillion new ingredients coming, like, each season. You know, you're always just trying to, like, find a way, like, some entry into interpreting something that makes it your own and, like, gives it some sort of, like, interest at the moment. And without having other ways of, like, entering that point of inspiration, then, you know, you just, your work becomes stale, I think, no matter what you do.
Cool. And kind of on that similar note, you know, having the two crafts that you engage in with a high level of frequency, how do you balance your, because I'm guessing art design's more of like a traditional 9-to-5, and then how do you balance that with bartending at night?
I mean,
home, like, at 4 in the morning, especially because in New York, the bars close so late.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely hard. So my full-time job now is in an office. I work for Skernick Wines and Spirits, which is a distributor. So we go into the office, and technically you are supposed to be there from 9-to-5. That rarely ever happens for me. I try to go in at, like, a gentleman's 10 o'clock and, like, stay a little bit later in the day.
You only have to stay 5 minutes until after your boss leaves.
Yeah, and then you can run away, of course. But yeah, so, like, trying to navigate, like, sort of being creative on point like that, It can be very difficult. I think people that are freelance designing probably have a lot of the same sensibilities the bartenders do, where like later nights are probably their jam anyway. So you do have a little bit more freedom that way. But so creative energy is creative energy no matter what you do. So if you're working a bunch of shifts, it's not like necessarily you have the mental energy to go home and like all of a sudden bust out a bunch of work. So it's definitely, it's something like I'm constantly trying to balance. I don't have any really good answers for it other than like, I do think like a change of scenery is nice. When you're going back and forth between the two things, between bartending and doing design work, and your scene is changing each time, then like it does sort of like, it's like sort of like sitting up from your desk every once in a while, just sort of get the juices flowing. Toggling back and forth between jobs can do the same thing sometimes. And then you just have to have at least a day where you don't think about any of it, where you just sit in your stretchy pants and watch Netflix and like try not to like focus on any of that stuff. That's super, super key.
That also, does help to replenish the creative flow.
Exactly.
By not doing anything at all.
Yes.
But you can tell yourself, oh no, I'm watching film. I'm taking in other people's creative works.
Yeah, exactly. I'm watching the film to get an idea.
It's like, the Herbie reboot with Lindsay Lohan. I don't know if that's considered filmmaking.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. So now I'm going to ask you about, you know, kind of looking at bars and kind of dissecting what they do from like a design standpoint. What are some of the common mistakes that you see with a lot of bars when either they're doing their logo or even more specifically when they're designing their menus?
Yeah, I see less things with logos that I end up not liking. There are certainly some that I think are, you know, more inspiring or more in line with my personal aesthetic than others. But with menus, it's always, it's just always the first thing I look at. There's like no helping that. No, it's just a knee-jerk reaction. And for me, a lot of my opinions come from practical experience. When I was working on the menus at Pouring Ribbons, in those first couple of years, we were changing the menu seasonally. So every 3 months, we were switching out information on those menus. And even though the templates were staying the same, you still had to like figure out a way to move things around. And it was like a really great sort of like a test case to see how people respond to information in general. So now I'm always curious at a couple of things. I think like one of the big things I look at is how cocktails are described. If they're sort of too esoteric and people can't like begin to wrap their brains around what the flavors are going to be at all, then it really doesn't do the drinks any favors. I think it's like you're constantly having to look for a balance of that. I think like there's actually like an ongoing conversation about whether or not to put brand names into things or just descriptors.
Yeah.
And like, I don't like to go too much one way or another, because I think like people understanding what like brands they actually like can be important. And it's like educating drinkers to make smarter decisions about what they want to drink the next time they go to a different place and look at a menu. But if it's like all brand names and no other flavor descriptors, then that's tough too. You're like always trying to find a balance there. And then a lot of it just comes down to the amount of information. I've seen a lot of really beautiful menus, but they're like, they look like a volume of a book. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's still a service industry. Your intention is to get someone in there, let them make an informed decision about what they want to drink.
Some people don't want a big menu.
No.
Some people don't.
No, and like the number of times that I've like handed a menu to someone like at multiple jobs and have them be like literally say out loud, I do not want to read this. Tell me what I should drink.
Yeah.
Some people love that, but it should always be kind of like a secondary thing. All of this intricate information on a menu, if you want to put those things there so people can enjoy them in their own time, then that's awesome. But that shouldn't be your primary purpose, I think.
Yeah, totally.
You should want people to find something to drink. And then like, while they're drinking their drink, let them enjoy the menu and all those sort of Easter eggs that you put into the information. But if I can't find that information easily, or if I feel like it's difficult to navigate, it doesn't matter how pretty it is. It's not doing its job. It's supposed to be a functional piece of work.
I've even made or heard customers like make that comment like, man, oh, I didn't know I was going to have to do a book report just to get a cocktail. And they make like nasty
totally.
Comments.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, I remember one of the solutions for that we did at Rick House that we ended up coming up with was we had that really dense menu, right? And it was just like, it's essentially like a big book, right?
Right.
And you know, the first couple of weeks people started getting, we'd make those comments and it'd take them forever to get a drink. That we just printed up like a house favorites page. Mm-hmm. That's like, oh, here's our full menu, or if you just like to pick from one of our house
bullet
favorites.
Bullet points, yeah.
You know, and of course, those were like the ones with the most, with the highest margins
of
that
course.
Everybody likes.
Yeah. At Pouring Ribbons, I always found it interesting that the drinks that ended up being ordered the most often were the very first and the very last on the list. So it's like people all of a sudden start to get intimidated by all of the middle information, but like the very first one that they see, or if they're scanning and like the very last word that they see, those often were the most, or things that were at the top of the page versus the middle of the page. I think people in general, when they're walking into a cocktail bar, because you know this isn't where you're probably where you're going to just order a beer and a shot, and there are going to be so many ingredients that you've never seen before, or drinks where you don't quite know what it's going to taste like right away, there's this really big intimidation factor. Mm-hmm. And people don't want to look stupid. They don't want to look stupid in front of strangers, which are like the bartenders that are taking care of them. And they especially don't want to look stupid in front of their Tinder dates or like their work friends that they're mm-hmm. hanging out with. So I think like there's this moment of panic that happens on some level, whether people realize it or not, where they just want to make sure that they're ordering a drink that's not going to make them feel foolish. They're not going to say the wrong thing. And the menu goes a long way towards making people feel more comfortable in that decision-making process. You know, the bartenders do that too, but like sometimes the menu is what you have in those first couple of minutes before someone that's working in the bar has a moment to like touch and make contact. So like the menu has to do that work for you.
And in regards to, let's just say, you know, more aesthetics rather than like strict verbiage.
Yeah.
What are some of the common mistakes you see? Because we've all seen that menu before. That's like, it's like dark red paper with like black cursive writing on it. You're like, I can't read this. And it's like not even dark. I can't read any of this.
Yeah, absolutely. You always have to think about the environment that menu is going to be read in. You know, just because you might have the windows wide open and all the lights on during prep, you know, or like when you're planning out these menus, well, you know, what is it like at service? Is it just a super candlelit, like really low lit situation? Because there are certainly like there are bars that I love going to where like the menu is beautiful, the drinks are gorgeous, the people that work there are fantastic, and obviously the design of the menu is like 99% there, but then I can't read it because the light is too low and they've chosen dark colors. Or the size of the type is just like a smidge too small, or the lines are too tight together. So like scanning a thing can become really difficult because the lighting just isn't appropriate. So if you know that like you're gonna be in a dark space, then you have to compensate for that. And I do think that like type size in general always starts out too small. I find that with my own work, because when you're looking at something on a computer, you know, you're not necessarily, you know, you're zoomed in a little bit anyway.
You have like a big iMac with like a 24-inch
exactly.
screen.
Even like, when you're looking at a PDF of something on your phone, like you're probably zooming in and taking a look. So until you've actually printed it out, the size that it's going to be, you know, printed in and are reading it in the environment that it's going to be used in constantly, then you do not know like what's going on. And I always end up widening my line spacing a little bit, and probably type goes up. There have been typefaces that I really loved conceptually in design, and then I find when they're actually printed, maybe the width of the lettering ends up too small, and it sort of disappears on the page, and then you can't read it once it's actually printed. So like, you know, beginning to end, like it has to be a practical experience. You have to have that thing on paper before you know if
okay,
it's exactly
so you
right.
almost have to print up a demo. Another mistake I've seen people make in the industry is they'll print up like a really beautiful menu, right? But like they'll neglect to actually have a version that they can edit themselves. So like if they change up like a brand or a price or anything on the menu, they end up having to pay this graphic artist, I don't know, like $500 just to make the simplest changes. Like, how could a place like avoid that?
There's no really easy answer to this.
So hold on, other graphic artists are gonna be out there like, oh, they'll be blowing this for us. I make a lot of my money like by charging people to just like move a few periods.
I mean, I do think you have to value the quality of the work, and like you definitely want to pay for what it's worth, but. You have bars that are either, they're doing one of two things. They're either making changes to the menu, and when they do that, they send it back to the firm or the designer that originally did it, and they just have them do it, and it's probably like being printed at an actual like printing place, which means that they're probably not changing the menu as often. And that may be a case definitely where, like you said, where you have like a sheet that you can print in-house that has like maybe monthly specials or like things that you want to feature. And maybe that is something that they're changing mm-hmm. themselves. Or you have a situation, which is mostly what I've done, and so I'm constantly trying to find solutions to this, where an initial design firm or designer will design the menu and then hand off the file to the purveyors of the bar to make changes as they see fit. Mm-hmm. And this is gonna require like a couple of things. It's gonna mean that like someone on the staff has to be able to manage that file, like which means—
What, Illustrator, or which one would you recommend?
So I always use Illustrator and InDesign for my work, which I mean, I think is pretty common. Yeah. You know, like no one's making really great menus in Word, you know, or something like that, which means immediately these are programs that most people don't know how to use. And even when it's simple changes, there can be a lot of ways to accidentally mess things up. So like you have to have some familiarity with those programs, even if it's minimal. Then a lot of the time they're printing in-house, because if you're going to make constant changes, it means that you don't necessarily want to send out a print job and wait for it to come back. At Pouring Ribbons, we printed in-house constantly.
That was really nice paper. You guys did that in-house?
Yeah, really nice paper. It is a paper purveyor out of Brooklyn, and they make these really great papers that are finished in a way that like water doesn't necessarily mess everything up right away.
What kind of paper is that?
It's like, I don't even remember. It's like part of their like Star Dream series or something, so it's like a little bit glossy. It's just like the way that it's treated. And I actually still use that purveyor a lot for projects now because that paper's so good and it's not that expensive and it can fit in a normal printer. But that's another thing that I see, like you get these beautiful menus someplace and, you know, in a vacuum that menu is pristine, but people do not treat these things nicely, like in the space.
And they will
like,
steal them?
Oh, they're going to steal them. They're going to use them as coasters. They're going to use them to like, if their chair is wobbly, they're going to shove one under there. Like any possible way that these pieces of paper can be abused, they're going to be abused. So like, you need to do something that like is going to have a little bit of longevity to it. But when I make these menus now, it's like always a balance between like trying to figure out how to hand off files that are a little bit like idiot proof in a way, which doesn't sound very nice, but, because there are going to be, people are going to do things to that design that like I did not intend. And I want to make sure that like the template stays in place as much as possible. But, I think it's always a learning process. And I always offer actually like a little tutorial if people want to be able to change menus in-house, like we can sit down for an hour and I'll show you how to use Illustrator or InDesign in a way. No one's ever taken me up on it. Because I think like you're really busy and you just want to get this thing done. And so like maybe you don't want to take
the time.
And they
all think they're like smart enough to figure out on their own. Like, I know this, I have an iPhone, I can figure this out.
Exactly.
Like, this isn't like, it's not as intuitive as you might expect.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it's not even that they can't figure out how to change a word or change a number, but you know, the layout ends up being a little bit wonky because they're not looking at things that a designer would naturally look at. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to, I'm a big believer in the idea of like smaller businesses being able to have something beautiful that they're managing in-house, but it does require like a little bit of understanding and knowledge. Or if you're gonna send it back to a designer to get switched up every once in a while, then, you know, that's another conversation. Like how, you know, for me, I'm constantly thinking what's a fair price to ask for this and, you know, how much turnaround time, you know, should I really be asking? So you want to get people into the right habits for that sort of thing as well. I don't know.
Okay. So on that point, you're talking about costs and stuff. Say I'm Joe Bar Manager, right? And I'm going to do my menu for a new spot I'm working on. And I'm going to hire a designer to do my menu.
Right.
What are some tips that you would give somebody to avoid any pitfalls or mistakes and things that would like maybe cost them more money down the road? What are some ways to avoid the common mistakes that people make on our end?
Right. I mean, the first two questions I always ask are how often are you changing your menu, and do you plan on printing in house? Because those two things immediately are going to tell me, you know, is this a file that needs to be easily edited? And it gives you immediate limitations on the type of paper you can use, you know, because they're probably even if they're using like a pretty nice printer, they're not using like a print house printer. So like we're talking 8.5 by 11 that's being altered in some way, whether they're cutting it in half or folding it in half. Like there are only so many formats of paper that they're going to be able to use. Your stock size is going to change, that sort of thing.
Hey, have you heard of this yet? Someone was telling me there's PVC paper.
What?
it's made of PVC, but it's super thin, and it looks like a regular menu, but like when they're dirty, you just throw them in the dishwasher and like you can wash them.
Oh my God, swoon. Like that would
right?
be
Right? I heard about a bar in London amazing. That did it. I haven't heard, I've Googled, I haven't found anything about it, but when I first heard it, I was like, that sounds so awesome.
Yeah. I'd be so curious to see what like the texture was like too, what that felt like in hand. Oh man.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off your game. So back to avoiding common pitfalls when you're hiring someone.
Yeah, I mean, so be aware of whether or not you're going to change something. And if you do think this is something you want to do seasonally, or like maybe you've even got like a large rotating beer selection, so like constantly that sort of thing is going to have to be changing. You know, then conversations about format can easily sort of like be taken proactively right from the beginning. And then really think about how these menus are going to be used. Are you a high volume bar? Are you like a seated only bar? Is this something that you really want people to be able to take their time with? Or do you want something that is going to be able to like be sort of tossed at a bar standing five deep, you know, to look at really quickly to order a thing? I redesigned a menu last year where they were having problems with people navigating where the food was on their menu. You know, it was sort of like, it was a multi-page document and the food was sort of like tucked in near the back and people weren't finding it easily and the type was kind of small so they couldn't necessarily read it easily. And this is a bar that does like a lot of volume. So I was like, well, you know, like when you have a folded menu with many pages and it's gonna be stapled down the middle, the natural inclination of that printed piece is gonna open up towards the middle and that's gonna be a really easy page to find, that centerfold page. Like if you're a busy bartender trying to make drinks and answer someone's question about where the food menu is at the same time, then like just like thumbing open to that page and handing it to them be very easy
that's
if it's really like right on the middle page.
Yeah.
So we intentionally put the food right there, cocktails in the beginning, and then like anything that was sort of like secondary and tertiary like went towards the end. So you have to think about how people are gonna navigate that. You don't want a menu that's like super large if people are gonna be handling it when they're standing. You don't want something that's awkward for them to read through if they don't have a space. Yeah.
If it's high volume, you don't wanna give them like a massive book because you're gonna be low volume really quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, I mean, if you have time to like really, if it's seated only and you want, then people know that they're gonna sit and like really think about stuff and they, you know, they wanna read through a beautiful document, then you can do all sorts of weird stuff if you want. But you have to think practically about how that document is going to be used.
What's like one of the weirdest menus that you've seen, or a menu that you didn't think was going to work and ended up working really well?
Ooh, that's a good question. Little Red Door in Paris.
I love that.
Their menu is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be really harumphy about it at first because I hadn't seen it in person, and I had read that they were doing this thing where artists had interpreted the cocktails and then done a painting or done a drawing, and that's what you looked at.
That menu was beautiful too.
It was so gorgeous.
Such a cool bar.
But in the beginning, I didn't know that there was I thought it was just the pictures and no text, and so that went immediately to my instinct to be like, we got to teach people like what the ingredients are in these drinks. So, you know, if they don't know what chenar is, you know, at least tell them that like chenar is in this drink so that when they decide they like it, you know, and the next time they order something, they can say like, oh, this drink's got chenar in it and I really dig chenar. But if you don't start giving them the vocabulary to order for themselves, then, you know, we're not really elevating the drinking experience for anybody. So I was like, just pictures. I don't care if it's pretty. It's going to be stupid. But of course, they were actually doing something very smart where you have the picture. So it's like this initial instinct. And then you pull out this tab that does have the printed description of the drink so that you can like read and figure out what ingredients are in it. They were just making that like secondary information instead of primary information, but they were still making it available. So of course, I went to Little Red Door this last year, fell in love with it, fell in love with that menu. Very smart.
Did you try to walk in the Little Red Door?
I did.
Because I tried to walk in the wrong door.
Did you?
For those of you guys that don't know, Little Red Door is this awesome speakeasy in Paris. And they actually have like a mock door that you like walk up and it's like we were trying to get in. And then all of a sudden like this false panel opened up on the side of us and people walked out. And I like had to real quickly pretend like I knew the correct way to get in. Like, oh yeah, I was just playing around out here.
Just making a joke. I wonder how many people do that.
I'm sure it's just constant. It's probably throughout the course of the night.
I also didn't want to enjoy, there's a bar run by a lovely friend of mine, Al Sotak, Jupiter Disco in Brooklyn. And they have no printed menus. They do these scrolling menus on old school monitors that are up at corners of the bar. And the graphic designer in me wanted to not enjoy the fact that they weren't going to have like a print piece of some kind. But it makes so much sense because for them, they can change out that information whenever they like.
And that's clutch. I'm so jealous of bars where they can rotate the menu that quickly because, you know, we all know from working in the liquor industry, like every now and then, like one of your reps will hit you up and be like, hey, man, I got to unload 10 cases of so-and-so brand. Like I can give, you know, we have pricing that's insane, 2-for-1 or blah, right. whatever, blah, blah. And then you can buy that and then put it on the menu like the next day.
Yeah.
You know, you can take advantage of those deals where it's harder if you're, you know, it's something to take in consideration. It's like, if you're going to have one menu for the rest of the year, do you have a plan for taking advantage of good deals like that?
Yeah. Or the opposite where like you have your heart set on this ingredient that was definitely going to be on the menu for ages. And then magically it's not available for like 3 months. You know, what are you going to do? I do think being able to change out stuff is important. Yeah. So Jupiter Disco, like it was a smart idea for them. This great aesthetic. It goes well with the bar. It's easily legible. You know, I just didn't want to like it because it wasn't a favorite thing. Made me feel obsolete. But like they pulled it off in this really beautiful way. And it's always interesting to see different places and their solutions to those types of things.
That is so super cool. Yeah, it's crazy because I feel like, you know, when like coming up with an amazing menu is just like one part of it. But what they managed to do is have a really cool menu like style that fits the format of the venue.
Yeah.
Where so often, you know, you see a place where like the menu aesthetics just don't fit the space.
Yeah.
It just didn't make any sense. Like, I mean, it could be in a situation like we mentioned where it's like you go to, it's supposed to be a high volume bar, the menu is really thick and difficult to navigate. So it's so much harder to get a drink.
Yeah. I mean, I think it can be very dangerous to automatically like have this knee jerk reaction. Like I need a menu. So clearly it's going to be in this shape on this type of thing. And the fact is like the amount of solutions there are to like printed things, like these beautiful, lovely little sometimes takeaway like keepsakes from your experience, like you can do so much interesting stuff. You just kind of have to think outside of the box about it and make sure that it's actually appropriate for the venue that you're trying to create.
And do you do just menus or do you also design like t-shirts, merch and things of that nature?
I definitely like right now I sort of like take any freelance job that I think is interesting, you know, and where I think we're going to be able to get along. So I just finished doing a booklet for Fernet that was really enjoyable. And I'm working on a couple logos right now. I mean, menus are definitely kind of where my heart's at. Mm-hmm. But I'm also trying to do some more stuff on my own. So like I've been making these icons of like templates for cocktails.
Ooh, I've seen those. I love them.
Thank you.
Are those for sale anywhere?
Well, no, because I'm like, I think I want to put this on stuff. Like I started just putting them on Instagram for funsies, but the people seem to like them.
Someone's
going to
steal that idea if you don't start putting them on like prints.
Well, I will hurry up and do you that know, then.
Or like t-shirts or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's just a question of being like, well, what stuff would I like if I see other people's things? Like, what would I really want? And then I'll figure out how to do it. That's more of like a passion project, though. But I mean, I think, like we said, like there's so many creative people in this industry. You know, they always sort of get delighted when you can combine these cool like pieces of merchandise and this industry that we like tear our hair out working so hard at all the time. So like anytime you see someone else sort of celebrating it in a new way, it can be very exciting. And like it's nice to have different things out there, like Polite Provisions. Like you've always been really great about that. All these really cool pieces of merchandise. And
My business partner, especially, he kind of spearheads that. He's really big on like just limited time only offerings. Like he's like, we're printing up this t-shirt. If you don't buy it, you're just never getting one. That's that.
Very smart.
So it kind of makes our like clientele be really good about like, you know, our customers or sorry, our guests see those t-shirts like, oh, I want that scarf or I want that hat or whatever.
Yeah.
And it kind of becomes a thing where it's like almost bragging rights where people are like, oh yeah, I've been coming here a long time. Look at this hat.
Totally.
You can't buy it anymore.
Well, I mean like these cocktail bars, it's a combination of like a local for people. Like this is the place where they can go and feel comfortable. But it's also this sort of theatrical experience a lot of the time too. And people want ways to remember that thing. Like they want to be able to take something with them, which is why I think menus get stolen so often, or why so many places sell their menus now.
Just like
now.
Matchbooks, coasters, all that stuff, anything with a logo, that anything that is like proprietary, people just love, they eat it up.
I feel like there was definitely this period of time where no one was printing up matchbooks because it's like smoking wasn't legal in, you know, indoors anymore. So like, why would you
for
need that?
Candles.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Candles.
No one was doing coasters, but like now it's like coming back full circle where people realize that like those little bits of branding, they make your concept feel more alive. It shows that you have like an attention to detail and people want them. They want to take them with them. They want these keepsakes from their experience.
Okay, cool. So we're gonna have to wrap up in a second, but before we say goodbye, if somebody wanted to hire you for your services and be like, hey, Amanda, I heard you on the podcast. I want you to do my menu. Where should they find you?
Oh, well, you can always go to my website, which is AmandaElderDesign.com. I've been very lazy about updating it lately, but you can send me a message through that.
It's not Flash. It's not that old.
It's not Flash. No. It's Squarespace. It's what the kids use these yeah. days. I just haven't put the last couple projects that I've done on it, but that's probably the easiest way.
So AmandaElderDesign.com.
Yes, very original.
If they want to get a cocktail from you, they can find you at Donna Cocktail Club.
I'm at Donna Cocktail Club on Saturdays, and the rest of the time I'm out trying to go to everyone else's bars and drink their lovely drinks when I'm not in the office at Skernick. So, yeah, but I'm around.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Amanda, for joining us today.
Thank you so much
guys,
for
thank
having
you so
me.
Much for tuning in. Again, I'm your host, Eric Castro. Thank you so much for tuning in, and have a wonderful week.
Thanks.